Good afternoon. This is a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas, 91.3 KUAF. This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, September 6th, 2019. Ahead this hour, the band White Mansion met with our Timothy Dennis at the studios of Fayetteville Public Television. He spoke with them, and they played as well, and we'll hear highlights from the collaboration in our second half hour. Stay with us after today's show for Science Friday. This week, indigenous societies have long been observing and making sense of the world. So how can Western science welcome more indigenous scientists? Plus, how educators are using stories about the stars to connect indigenous youth to science and their culture. Hear more on Science Friday, beginning today at 1. This is Ozarks at Large. The Bail Project is a national organization devoted to upending the conventional bail system and reducing the number of people who are presumed innocent but still incarcerated because they cannot afford to post bail. There are offices in New York City, Phoenix, St. Louis, Chicago, and other large cities, and, as of last week, in Northwest Arkansas. One of the two bail disruptors employed in the region is Madeline Portia, a graduate of the University of Arkansas. She's returned to this area after she lived in New York City so she could be part of the new Bail Project presence here. This week, we reached her as she was waiting at the Washington County Jail to interview potential clients. She says the Bail Project works with local authorities to identify people incarcerated on low-level charges.
We go to the jail and interview them. We talk to them about their ties to the community, ways that we might be able to get in touch with them to remind them about upcoming court cases. We discuss any barriers that they might have, any difficulties they might have in making future court appearances, like transportation, childcare, getting time off of work. And we talk about how we can help to remove those barriers, whether we can arrange for possibly a volunteer to help transport them to and from their court date, or whether we can give them bus passes or get an Uber or a Lyft to get them to and from court.
Portia says past history of court appearances is also examined and discussed. The Bail Project will post the full cash bond of all clients approved for the program.
We're able to ensure that as long as that person makes all of their court dates, at the end of their case, however it's resolved, then the money gets refunded back to the Bail Project, and we're then able to use that money to bail out the next person.
The mission, she says, is a release with community support model. And she says the establishment of an office in Northwest Arkansas, one of the smallest, if not the smallest cities with a Bail Project presence, can prove that the concept doesn't just work in larger cities. She says, though, there will be some different challenges in Northwest Arkansas, including a much smaller public transportation profile. But she says making sure people can be released and then have access to make their court appearances is important.
Sitting in jail pre-trial can disrupt people's lives immeasurably. People, even as soon as, 2 or 3 days in jail, can disrupt somebody's life incredibly, where the person could lose their job, could even lose their kids, lose their housing. There are so many ways that being in jail just for a short amount of time can severely negatively impact somebody's life. And so people in the community recognize that, recognize that it's crucial that the person gets their day in court, that they show up for their court dates, and are willing to work with us to make that happen.
The Bail Project's launch in Northwest Arkansas takes place during a public conversation about the future capacity of the Washington County Jail. There had been discussion of expanding the jail. Portia says, though, a resolution adopted last month by the Washington County Quorum Court that no person should be detained in the jail solely based on inability to pay bail indicates support from elected officials for something like the Bail Project. She says law enforcement officials, jail staff, judges, and attorneys from the area have expressed support and help. Madeline Portia, like her Northwest Arkansas Bail Project colleague Irvin Camacho, has the job title of Bail Disruptor. She says she's not certain how that title was chosen, but she says she thinks it makes sense.
I think that we are kind of disrupting the bail system in that without support and specifically financial support, people are not able to buy their own freedom. So in that way, we're sort of disrupting the process and helping folks to get out simply just so that they can fight their case from the outside. And, you know, whatever happens in their case, happens in their case.
Madeline Portia is one of two bail disruptors working for the Bail Project in Northwest Arkansas. The other is Irvin Camacho. She spoke with us from outside the Washington County Jail earlier this week in between interviews of potential clients. The local office for the Bail Project opened last week. You can learn more at bailproject.org.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The Chili Pepper Cross Country Festival and the Razorback Run will host the inaugural Fayetteville Double Down Running Weekend, October 5th and 6th. Participants can earn a Fayetteville Double Down Medal by participating in both longstanding events. Proceeds to benefit local charitable projects. ChiliPepperFestival.org or RazorbackRun.com. For more information.
This is Ozarks at Large, and with me on his phone from his office in Fort Smith is Michael Tilley with Talk Business and Politics. Michael, welcome to September.
Thank you. Welcome to the 100-degree weather in September.
Well, yeah, perhaps we're just in late August. Let's talk about building activity in the Fort Smith Metro. Building permits at least show us that values are up a bit. Help me understand what the latest numbers mean.
Well, the latest numbers show August showed a nice rebound. Now, year to date, it's not so good, but looking at August, building permit values for Fort Smith, Van Buren, and Greenwood were a little over 28 million. And that was up 4% over August 2018 numbers. So that was a good number. Now, year to date, though, the permit activity is 136 million. It's down just a little over 15% compared to the first 8 months or to the same period. So what we're seeing, you know, I mean, this is not a good sign, frankly. I mean, building activity in any economy, even a metro economy, you know, it's a good sign of overall economic activity. I'm frankly surprised at this. I figured after, you know, the flood damage, the floods receded, that we would see a lot more activity related to housing repair, commercial building repair, that type of thing, but it just hasn't been as robust as I thought. So we'll see. You know, it's got 4 months. It's kind of rebound, but 15% gap is going to be hard to overcome.
Well, an event that is designed to get more economic flow into Fort Smith, the Invest Fort Smith Summit, is set for later this week. This is the second time it's been held. What happens with Invest Fort Smith?
They bring together, the purpose is to bring together everyone who has an interest. And the focus, of course, is downtown Fort Smith. But really, you know, they talk about development in a broad frame. You know, they bring together property owners, people, you know, investors, people with ideas, public officials, just try to get those all in the same place to talk about, you know, what's possible. You know, last year, one of the key discussions was moving forward, being more aggressive on truck traffic or, you know, traffic studies. Downtown Fort Smith, and that has moved along quite a bit this year. I think that was propelled by that last year, and it convinced everybody that, yeah, you know, that we're all really of the same mind to do something, so let's do something. So that was one thing that came out of last year's event. This year, we'll have a little bit of an interesting twist. You're going to have four area mayors, Mayor Malba, Fort Smith, Greenwood, and Van Buren will be part of a panel discussion, and Talisha Richardson, who's head of 646 Downtown, which is a group sponsoring this September 19th event. She said she's brought them together because she wants people to know that they do work together and that, you know, sometimes you may not hear things going on, but it doesn't mean that there's not discussion going on behind the scenes to among these people to collaborate on regional economic development. So that'll probably be the interesting twist to this year's event.
Well, this isn't really a fair segue, but you talk about discussions behind the scenes. The Fort Smith City Board wants to have some executive sessions before the hiring of certain city administration officials, and this has rankled some. Of course, an executive session means you do it without the public or press present.
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to pull this off. So just from the journalist and me standpoint, this is troubling. I mean, you know, executive session, you know, is really limited in terms of what you can talk about. Now they've added something in here that where they're going to talk about, you know, who they're going to hire. Well, that's not really part of what Arkansas law, that's not part of the framework in Arkansas law, what you can discuss in executive session. So that's problematic. The other issue is that, and this was a 4-3 vote. It's been very controversial, very contentious, even among board members. You've got some board members who say, look, we've hired a city administrator. That's part of his job. You know, if we're going to give him the responsibility and accountability to manage the city government for us, then we've got to give him the authority. But you have other directors say, well, yeah, but we want to have a little bit of a say on these key department heads. They've had this before. They brought it up, you know, back in, I don't know, I think about 10 years ago. Yeah, a little more than 10 years ago. They brought it up and it was shot down and it was pretty contentious then. But this is just, unfortunately, a board of directors has decided that it wants to some degree, micromanage the city administrator. And another issue with this that people have raised, you know, if the city administrator leaves, good luck hiring a competent and, you know, aggressive, forward-thinking city administrator, because most folks aren't going to want to come to a job. Their key decisions are, you know, they've got people looking over their shoulders on key decisions like that. So that could be another problematic issue with this move by the board.
All right. You can read about all of these items and many others at talkbusiness.net. Finally, Mississippi, a 6.5-point favorite over the Arkansas Razorback Tackle Football Club Saturday night. What do you think?
Is it a tackle football club?
I didn't think that. You know, week. As soon as I said that, I knew that I had.
Yeah.
Well, I'll pick the upset. I'll take Arkansas over Mississippi.
Well, you're much more optimistic than I am. I think the Rebels, Bear Sharks, whatever they are going to eke out a win.
All right. Michael Tilley talks with us most Fridays from his office in Fort Smith. Michael, thank you for your time.
All right. You're welcome, sir.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week on Latino USA, we meet Laredo's premier citizen journalist, La Gordiloca.
In the same family, you have somebody who loves her and somebody who hates her. La Gordiloca is that much of a tricky situation that your own family will be against you.
That's this week on Latino USA.
Latino USA, tomorrow afternoon at 3 on 91.3. Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville is now one of only a handful of museums to have an infinity mirror room in its permanent collection. Through the use of mirrors, guests are immersed in a colorful world that appears to go on forever. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda attended a preview yesterday of the newly acquired work. She brings us this report.
Yayao Kusama, a 90-year-old Japanese artist, imagined this new work called Infinity Mirrored Room, My Heart is Dancing into the Universe. Created last year, the artwork is an enclosed room filled with mirrors and dotted paper lanterns that change color. Alejo Benedetti, assistant curator of contemporary art, says when guests step into the 20-foot by 20-foot room, they become part of the artwork.
This is an experience, and this is not just an artwork that you look at. This is an artwork that is supposed to transport you. It is supposed to give you very particular sensations in terms of being a little disoriented, but also sort of just awestruck by this experience. And it's always been my experience that these really deliver on that. And this is her doing just something really spectacular.
Kusama often uses bright colors, shapes, and natural forms in her work, recalling hallucinations from her childhood when she was surrounded by endless repetitions of dots, nets, and flowers. Kusama, who studied and worked in New York from 1958 to 1973, is a contemporary artist who makes paintings, sculptures, performances, and installations. According to the Smithsonian's Hirshhorn Museum, Kusama has produced more than 20 distinct infinity mirror rooms. 2 years ago, the Washington, D.C.-based museum hosted an exhibition that presented six of them, reportedly the most ever shown together. Alejo Benedetti, assistant curator of contemporary art at Crystal Bridges, says these rooms tend to travel quite a bit.
And a lot of times, even if a museum or an institution owns one of the rooms, they don't necessarily keep them up all the time. And our intention is to keep it up permanently. And so that does make it a little unique. It's not just a sort of fleeting 1 or 2 month thing.
Visitors to the Bentonville Museum will be able to immerse themselves in the room 1 or 2 people at a time for about a minute.
It's a very individualized experience. And so, yeah, it's you're bringing to it whatever you're thinking that day, or whatever your sort of personal mindset is. And so, yeah, it's the sort of thing that is, I think a deeply personal sort of experience to be in this work.
Installing a permanent room within the museum's contemporary art gallery has allowed staff to rethink the space and alter the flow of the room. In the past, Benedetti says the art was displayed mostly in chronological order. For the first half of the gallery, he says that has remained more or less the same.
It's a little bit more thematic for these last for the last half, so folks can walk into the Kusama room. They can experience, you know, its abstraction, its repetition, it's all of that. And then when they move into the very next section, it's focused on abstraction, but abstraction in many cases with this sort of repetition. And so we did that very intentionally to try to continue that and to also make it sort of make sense. And so that we're not just sort of plunking this really spectacular room in the middle of a place that doesn't make sense. And so we start with that and then sort of move into a section that's more about figuration. But even as we were sort of thinking about that, it's figuration seen by artists who are very much aware of abstraction, and so you have that influence coming in as well.
The latter section contains 6 newly acquired artworks that guests can view in addition to the Infinity Mirror Room.
There's a new work by Emma Amos, Jordan Castile, Loy Hollowell, Nathaniel Mary Quinn, Kehinde Wiley, and a promise gift from Catherine Stephen Roach, that is a work by Roger Shimomura. And then, of course, the Kusama Room. So a number of new things for folks to see.
Museum members can preview Infinity Mirrored Room, My Heart is Dancing into the Universe, through September 30th. The artwork will open to the public October 2nd. Admission is free, but tickets are required. More information is available at crystalbridges.org. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Infinity Mirrored Room, My Heart is Dancing into the Universe, is the second piece Crystal Bridges has acquired from Kusama. The museum acquired another artwork in 2008 titled Flowers That Bloom Now. The brightly colored flower sculpture is covered in polka dots and is installed in the museum's North Forest.
Alto saxophonist Jackie McLean in the background, and I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday. We'll hear more from Jackie. We'll also hear from Justin Vasquez, John Schofield, Leon Thomas, and a final preview of the Romero Lobombo Peter Martin duo. All that and more on the next edition of Shades of Jazz.
And this is Ozarks at Large. Northwest Arkansas Community College's Brightwater Culinary School has a new executive director. Marshall Shofkowitz will be on campus at the end of the month. He spoke with Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek about the move and what he sees in the future of Brightwater.
So let's just start by talking about where you're coming from.
So I'm actually moving to Northwest Arkansas with my family. First time moving our whole family from Chicago, and we're incredibly excited to move down. Prior to taking the role as the executive director at Brightwater, I was the executive dean at Washburn Culinary and Hospitality Institute, which is part of the City Colleges of Chicago. And the interesting piece on that one, this is kind of a complete flip in roles, where Washburn is the oldest culinary school in the United States, getting ready to celebrate its 85th anniversary. And Brightwater is one of the newest culinary schools in the United States. So coming from historic tradition of many decades creating and teaching students in the city of Chicago, now coming to this revolutionary type of culinary program that Brightwater is just, it's an amazing change for me.
So you're coming from the oldest culinary program in the United States. What kind of experience do you think that brings to a new school like Brightwater?
So I've actually had 20 years of higher education experience, particularly in culinary schools. So I'm bringing what I hope is some stability, some knowledge of higher education, because all of the culinary schools that I worked at were regionally accredited institutions of higher learning. They weren't part of the national accreditation scene, which just has a different viewpoint on how we look at students. My focus has always been on the academic rigor and not just the technical skills that a student needs to have when they go out to find employment. So what I hope to bring to Brightwater is that combination of, one, being a chef. I am a classically trained chef. And two, instilling the importance of the academic rigor, meaning bringing the business side into the conversation, the soft skill side into the conversation and the education of the students, the career development pathways for those students. So it's not just teaching somebody how to pick a knife up and cut something or roll out a piece of dough. It's the why are we doing that and how does that relate to running and operating a business, whether it's the student's goal to run and operate their own business or if they're going to work for somebody else, that they understand how all the pieces come together and create almost like a building block, if you're thinking foundation in development.
What do you think are the biggest misconceptions about going to culinary school, either as a student that's considering it or just an outsider looking in?
So there's two that come to mind right off the bat. The first is that this is a career. It's a career that can take you anywhere in the world to work for, name the corporation. Reality-wise, is there is usually some type of food service or research and development that you can go into, whether it's in a retail operation, such as a restaurant, which I think that's what everybody thinks. You go to culinary school to become a line cook and then become a chef in a standalone restaurant, or you're going into research and development for an organization, one right down the road from the school, Tyson, or going to work in one of the Walmart kitchens developing for Walmart-specific branded products. There is such a plethora of opportunities for graduates to go into, so that this is a career. It's one that has given me the opportunity to travel the world as a chef. And the second misconception is that we're not really a business. When we're teaching students, why we don't throw our scraps away, why we will cross-utilize them into other products, or why it is important that every step you take counts from an efficiency standpoint, is because we're really, they don't know that this is a business. And at the end of the day, when a student graduates, our goal for them is to find employment. And that could be as just a regular cook working on a line. It could be the beginning of a research and development pathway. It could be starting their own business. And we have to teach them those skills about the hospitality industry as a whole. And every time I have a conversation with anybody about culinary or baking and pastry or the beverage world, we have to insert into that conversation that, hey, yeah, you're getting into a business that runs on razor-thin margins. So you're going to learn the business tactics. You're going to learn finance so you can actually be successful.
What are some of the challenges in the culinary industry right now that culinary education is hoping to address in the way that it teaches students?
To address the challenges in the industry, the biggest challenge is there is a labor gap. That's one of the key tenets of any culinary school is to try and help fill that labor gap that is currently in the marketplace. And that's a national trend. So that's one. The other aspect that I hope to bring into Brightwater to try and make a dent in is actually the mental health aspect of what has been plaguing the hospitality industry for decades, yet no one has actually really addressed. We're just starting that conversation. The suicides of some very high profile chefs created this, I'm trying to find the right word, created an opening for not just the industry, but for culinary schools to start to address the need to counsel cooks and students and chefs regarding the pitfalls and the dangers of the industry. Substance abuse, depression, anything that can trigger. It has never been a conversation in hospitality. That's something that I'm going to work with the Brightwater staff to figure out a way to address within our program.
So that's one thing you'd like to see at Brightwater. What about other things? Where would you like to take the school in the future from where it is right now?
The program's actually in a good place. It's got a solid foundational curriculum. With any curriculum, we're always going to revise as new trends come out or as we review it. We're not seeing the student outcomes that we're looking for, meaning the students aren't learning what we expect them to learn reality-wise. So walking in the door, and actually what I've been doing while we're packing and getting ready to move, I've been reading the curriculum and going through it. And again, it's a good foundation. Where do I see us a year from now, 2 years from now? We're, as one of the tenants and part of the mission of Brightwater, is to talk about those food systems and that entrepreneurship. We're really going to look to bring that into the curriculum and bring it to the forefront of the curriculum. We've got plans, which if I started talking about them now, would be very premature, as I'm not physically on the campus. But we're really going to look to, again, those food systems, entrepreneurship, and then threading through the entire curriculum, hospitality concepts, business entrepreneurship concepts. That's where we're going to look to go. To just strengthen what is already there.
I am curious because you're leaving a city that is very culturally diverse and therefore has, you know, a multitude of restaurants that reflect that. Northwest Arkansas is becoming a lot more culturally diverse, but we're not where Chicago is, at least yet.
You said a very key word, yet. You said that very key word there. I think Northwest Arkansas is on the verge of a boom of cultural change from a business perspective, but also from a migration into the region. Now, I know people who have lived there for a long time, that doesn't sound good, but from somebody coming in, it's an amazing opportunity to watch an entire region grow and change and mature into what it could be. The aspects of what Northwest Arkansas are, the people who live there and who have migrated there recently, I think has created almost the perfect storm for a cultural explosion, which is one of the reasons why I've been so attracted to wanting to come down there. we can talk about the different neighborhoods in Chicago and the different cultures. But I actually think you have that in Northwest Arkansas already. It's just a little different.
Thank you so much for speaking with us, for taking a break from packing and chatting with us.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. I really appreciate it.
That was Marshall Shofkowitz, the new executive director of the Brightwater Culinary School at Northwest Arkansas Community College, speaking with Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek. He'll be on campus at the end of the month.
91.3 is supported by Butterfield Trail Village, a premier Northwest Arkansas retirement community catering to active lifestyles and resident well-being. Offering daily activities, a variety of living options, plus wellness facilities, including an aquatic center and spa services. ButterfieldTrailVillage.org for information. For over 24 years, Community Clinic NWA has served as the medical home for thousands of our neighbors in Northwest Arkansas, providing health care in 14 locations, including Springdale, Rogers, Siloam Springs, Fayetteville, and Prairie Grove. Healthy people, healthy community. CommunityClinicNWA.org.
This is Ozarks at Large, and with me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio, it's been a while, is Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
Hey, you should be happy to have me. I am famous in Shell, Wyoming.
How are you famous in Shell, Wyoming? I know you've been to Wyoming since last talked.
Okay, we drove almost 3,000 miles in 8 days.
All right.
Across South Dakota, did all of the touristy things, the Badlands and the Corn Palace in Mitchell, South Dakota.
Right.
And Waldrug.
Right.
And then Deadwood, and then into Wyoming, where I met this lovely lady who's what we used to call a country correspondent for the newspaper.
Harrison newspaper still has those.
These are people that, like, say you live in
Rocky Comfort.
Yeah. And you write a little column for the newspaper about what goes on in Rocky Comfort.
Who's visited, what's happening at the community center, who maybe is on the mend from an illness or an injury.
The big news in Shell at that moment was they were trying to get broadband internet service.
That's pretty big news.
Anyway, I made the country correspondence column that she had met this interesting couple from Arkansas who were there following in the footsteps of the character Joe Pickett from the C.J. Box books. So you're lucky to have me back here. I am famous in 84 population Shell, Wyoming.
Well, we're happy you're back and that Shell's loss is our gain.
What was with that suit?
Oh, that's right. You haven't been here a while, and many listeners may not know. During Roots Festival, I wore a suit, an honest-to-goodness suit that had been designed by the fashion designer Nudie Cohn. He would outfit country stars in the 50s and 60s, like Porter Wagoner and Hank Williams and Graham Parsons and the Grievous Angels. Neil Pendergraf owns some of them. He's bought them. And so there was a display of these, and they're ornate. They're rhinestones
what
and designs.
What color was this one, yellow?
Somewhere between yellow and orange. And it was head to toe in this orange sequin, and it was a dream come true to be able to wear one of those authentic ones. I think it was worn by a member of Whisperin' Bill Anderson's band back in the 50s or 60s. Not quite sure if that's right.
Well, it was stunning.
Well, it was something.
So I assume the Roots Festival was a success.
It was. It was a blast. We missed you, but you had fun too.
And if you didn't see Khalid Sawaf's 10,000 Balconies at Theater Squared,
yes,
there's a review in today's Free Weekly online.
Okay.
Because it was amazing. And there's still a little time left for you to see Shakespeare in Love.
The inaugural presentation on the big stage there. It's got, what, two more weekends?
Two more weekends. This weekend and one more. Sweet and energetic and funny. And
the set. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, and the set's beautiful. Showtimes are 7:30 Wednesday through Saturday, 2 on Saturday and Sunday. Ends September 15th. Tickets start at $26.
Right.
But there's two great reasons to go to the River Valley this weekend. There is an exhibit by David Mudrinich at the Fort Smith Regional Art Museum. He's from Pope County. He's a professor at Arkansas Tech University. Paints these beautiful things, but he's one of those artists that really wants to be in the moment.
Yes.
And so part of his goal is to create a sense of place. And he started seeing beehives on like abandoned properties, abandoned farms, and started painting beehives. He grew up both in the city and in the country. And so that informed his interest in the natural world. His work is on show through November 24th at FS Ram, and admission is, of course, free. It is also the first concert of the Fort Smith Symphony season, and their guest pianist is like 24, and he graduated cum laude from Harvard at 19. The concert is called The Sounds of Joy, and it is unusually on Sunday.
Right. They work around different things.
And so this one is at 3 o'clock this Sunday at ArcBest Performing Arts Center. Tickets start at $25. You can read more at nwaonline.com or at the fortsmithsymphony.org. And also this weekend, there's a Harvest Poetry Reading at the Fayetteville Public Library at 6:30 with poets Ross Gay, Jeffrey Davis, John Yao, and Gwendolyn Ann Hill, celebrating the release of Davis's book, Night Angler.
Which is fantastic, I have to tell you.
What is it about?
It's poetry.
Okay.
And so it's about life and being a father and being a partner and fishing.
Okay. Also at 7 o'clock tonight, a concert with the Bella Vista Men's Chorus called You Lift Me Up happens at the Bella Vista Community Church. It's $10 at the door. And there's another installment at 3 o'clock on Sunday. And the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, probably best known for Mr. Bojangles.
But they've been playing music for 50 years.
And still have original members, which I think is super cool. 7:30 tonight at the Eureka Springs City Auditorium. Tickets start at $45.
Sounds great. Thank you, Becca.
Welcome. Glad to be home.
Going
to
come back on Sunday?
Yeah, I think I will.
Very good. Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
Fundraising month has begun at KUAF. Hi, this is Lee Wood, KUAF's general manager. All gifts we receive in the month of September will count toward our fall goal of $150,000. Support the programming you rely on, Morning Edition, All Things Considered, and Ozarks at Large, by making a one-time gift or set up a monthly gift and become a sustainer. Your gift in the month of September helps KUAF keep this important community service on the air. You can make your gift right now at supportkuaf.com.
Normally at this time on a Friday edition of our show, we hear conversation and music from a band recorded in the Furman Garner Performance Studio or somewhere else in the Carver Center for Public Radio. Today, we hear something a bit different. Earlier this year, the band White Mansion, that includes Dusty Domino, Eli Cash, Travis Kamer, Seth Hudspeth, and Andy Wade, joined Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis at Fayetteville Public Television to perform and talk a little about their music. The reason they met at Fayetteville Public Television is because their sound is a bit bigger than we normally accommodate in our Furman Garner Performance Studio.
This is Ozarks at Large on location at Fayetteville Public Television. I'm Timothy Dennis, and I'm joined by White Mansion. Welcome.
Okay.
Doing great. Awesome. First of all, how did you guys get together? I mean, how did you come together as a band?
Well, it started off as a solo project with Travis. Travis did put out an album called Lonesome.
Yeah, it was an EP.
And this was a couple of years, 2-3 years ago. And then he decided he wanted to, I'm speaking for Travis, but I know he decided he wanted to try to see what happened if he had a full band.
Yeah, I wanted to make it fruition from me just playing in my apartment and doing a whole album and then try to get some members. And I had played with Andy and Eli and Seth several times in other bands. And Dusty and I, this is our first project together, but we've known each other for quite some time.
Yeah.
But we've all known each other for like almost a decade, probably.
Most of my life.
So I live in Fayetteville, but pretty much everybody besides you lives in Harrison.
Yeah, we gather around, we get ready to do stuff, you know.
Yeah.
That's it.
So we have to travel a lot, but it's worth it.
Yeah,
we all,
for sure.
Right.
Well, y'all have a unique sound. It's very synth heavy, the guitar is up front, the bass cuts through. How did you kind of develop what I think of as like this dark, broody, almost science fiction type sound?
I think it's just, for us, we're all influenced by several different things, but there is a common ground. And for Andy and I, we both love really synth-heavy stuff. Well, and Dusty, we like, you know, kind of go back to like the, you know, mid-80s bands and stuff. And for me, I love shoegaze music as well. So I wanted to create a sonic sound with my guitar that kind of fills the void on the outside and everybody else is really tight in the middle, and that's kind of what I go off of, at least.
Yeah, emotional songs, you know, that are synth heavy, good bass, good drums. Eli plays giant, so
I was gonna say, me and Seth are both kind of rooted in the like heavier metal sort of area, so I think that really, with our influence being a rhythm section, it really, you know, gives it that edge.
Kind of behind everybody else. Like a 70s sound where bass and drums are very in the forefront.
Yeah, up front, you know. So
and these guys get a chance to do a bunch of cool stuff.
Oh, yeah, we're the foundation. Yeah.
We imagine ourselves in a stadium when we're playing. That sort of big, big sound, drums and bass, and then everything else filling in, you know, pretty much, you know.
Well, late last year, y'all signed a record deal, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about that. What does that mean for the band?
It's interesting because the record label is called Cold Transmission. It's out of Frankfurt, Germany, and they're really big in sort of dark, synthy type bands and that sort of thing. But shoegaze and really all, I mean, there's a lot of different types of bands, but it is a general sort of aesthetic that goes along with it. They heard some demos of ours and really liked it and then signed us to a deal. And so we're working on the album right now, actually over at East Hall. So we're keeping it all right here, you know, working with Chris Moore over there and tracking everything. Album should be out in the next few months.
Okay.
And it's going to come out on Cold Transmission with, we're digital and they're doing like digipacks and things like that, and then we're looking for another. We're looking to try to do vinyl at some point too. Okay. You know, that sort of thing. Sure. Videos and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. You know, everybody's real creative and artistic, and so that's all part of the deal too. You know, so trying to keep all that going.
Well, one final question: what or where is the White Mansion?
It's in your mind, man. You know, that's it. I don't know. I mean, you know, I guess maybe that is the best answer. Yeah.
That's well, Dusty's the living room. Yeah. I'm the bedroom.
That's right.
He's the bathroom.
Yeah. Okay.
Somebody's the basement. You know.
But y'all are all dressed in black though.
That's
it.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
The interior is black.
Okay.
Yeah. I, you know. Yeah.
The dark interior.
Yes.
Light exterior.
we have a song that we didn't play here today that. One of the lyrics says, it's white mansions with dirty floors. And it's kind of to me, it just sounds like, you know, this sort of gleaming, it conjures this sort of gleaming white exterior, but you go inside and the floors are messy and there's, you know, the kitchen sink's full of dishes, you know, and the refrigerator stinks because there's rotten food in there and that sort of thing. And I don't know, to me, you know, it really kind of speaks to modern times. yeah. you know, a lot. You know, a lot of times you have these gleaming exteriors and, you know, it's people hurting on the inside, you know. And so when I think of that name, White Mansion, it really kind of conjures up a lot of different modern images to me, although it does sound like an old, antiquated sort of thing.
Yeah,
it's a very modern sort of thing to me. I think, you know, people can maybe relate to that, you know.
We are scarred. You have to be scarred to be a romantic.
Eli Cash, Seth Hudspeth, Travis Kamer, Andy Wade, and Dusty Domino performing as White Mansion at Fayetteville Public Television. They spoke with Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis. The band will perform beginning at 10 tomorrow night at Smoke and Barrel Tavern in Fayetteville. They'll be joined on that bill by Little Rock-based band Illusionaut. You can find out more about the band at their Facebook page. Thanks to David Embry, Dan Robinson, and the staff of Fayetteville Public Television for their assistance with the session. You can see the entire session, including an additional song we didn't have time for on our program, on Fayetteville Public Television at 8 p.m. Monday and Friday nights next week. You can watch at faypublic.tv or on Cox Channel 218 or AT&T U-verse Channel 99 in Fayetteville. And you can find a link to a video of the performances at OzarksAtLarge.com. Contributors to this Friday edition of Ozarks at Large included Antoinette Grajeda, Zuzanna Sitek, and Timothy Dennis. Timothy also mastered our show. Our thanks to Michael Tilley from Talk Business and Politics and Becca Martin Brown from the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette for being with us today as well. Ozarks at Large is a production of 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Maysville. We will be back with you Sunday morning at 9 a.m. with Weekend Ozarks at Large. Thanks for being with us. Have a great rest of your Friday.